This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 373. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Hey, man, I just realized that I'm not going to be able to quit wheel grinding anytime soon now.
Uh-oh.
Because how else am I going to make the payments to the bank for when I buy the team?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, those payments don't make themselves.
No, so. You can. Now, we just have to figure out how many wheels do you have to grind to be able to, because you probably don't want to go full owner because you don't want to grind that many wheels.
No, ownership group is where it's at.
You want to be a part of an ownership group. And so if you're thinking, I don't know, 25%, that's a good percentage of the group.
Yeah, well, I want 50.
You want 50.
And then the rest of the group can have, or 51, and then the rest of the group can have 49.
That way you can make the decisions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I'm paying that kind of money, I want to be able to make the decisions.
Okay, so if the team sells for, I don't know, $5
billion. Right, yeah. I mean, that's a bargain.
How many wheels do you have to grind?
Okay. What's $5 billion divided by 1,000? However many that is.
5 million, wouldn't it be?
I think it is 5 million. I'm not a math major, but yeah. So just, you know, I'll start this weekend. We're starting with 8 in Longview. So yeah, we'll get 8 done there. So it'll only be 4,999,992 wheels left to go.
There it is. You're on your way, man. You're on your way to owning the Seattle Seahawks.
I know. Yeah. But it would be kind of fun if all the little flockers together, if we could all pitch in and buy the team. I thought that was an interesting news story anyways, that all of a sudden it sounds like it kind of has to be sold, or I don't know.
I think it has to be sold within a certain time frame, like within X amount of years of his death. I think I saw 10 somewhere.
I did too. Yeah.
And so it's just... Within that time.
Why is there this crazy urgency that just popped up in the last like couple days? Like,
because it's the off season and there's nothing else to talk about. So it's, the team needs to be sold soon, and soon is relative. And so soon could mean the next 6 or 7 years.
All right. Because I'm not in a hurry to get rid of Jody. I'm really not.
I mean, there's a lot of other a-hole billionaires that I'd like to have not owning the team.
You know, it
could be worse,
right?
It could be a lot worse.
Yeah. I mean, Bezos would be first up, right?
I mean, he's probably the most billionaire of all the other people that don't own a team, right?
Well, isn't Amazon like Seattle based anyways?
Yeah.
Like, didn't it start there?
What about the people who own Costco? Do they have an NFL team?
They can. Yes. They will just have to change them to the Seattle Kirklands or something like that. Yeah. Or the Kirkland Hawks. I don't know.
Why not Kirkland Field? That would be better. I mean, Lumen Field isn't all that great. Why not Kirkland Field?
No, but I have heard the players embracing the Lumen Field thing. Most of the newer ones, it's easier for them to have that roll off the tongue.
Yeah, well, I mean, you always get used to it whenever it's the name of something.
I don't.
As long as
they're still the Los Angeles Chargers, as far as I'm concerned.
In Crypto.com Stadium.
Or San Diego Chargers. See, I can't even get it right when I'm trying to get it wrong.
You'll get it wrong here eventually. Yeah.
Yeah. But OTAs, team selling, what else? What else is going on?
Yeah, OTAs this week. Of the OTA news that came out, what was the thing that your main takeaway from all of the news items that came out with OTAs?
Yeah.
What really struck you most of all?
Drew Lock has almost a 0% chance to be the starter.
What is that news that came out?
Just listen to all the different pressers, man. Without being prompted, many of the different players came out. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Gino was here with all the experience and he really makes things run and you can really tell. And he did such a great job for us last year. And the Gino praise was high from fellow players.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just take Will Disley's comments. I mean, he was effusive about how much he liked playing with Gino and how good Gino is. And then hearing Pete talk, I mean, Gino is not just in the driver's seat, but he's got the doors locked too. Like, it's going to be hard to come in and drag his ass out of there. Yeah, that's what I got out of OTAs. Gino Smith will be your week one starter. Freaking book it.
I knew this even before OTA started. So this wasn't, I guess this wasn't a news item to me because I already knew how much a lot of these players already love Geno.
Yeah, I just figured when Locke got there with the arm talent and everything that it would, you know, pop off the screen a little bit to all these guys, right? And just be like, well, you know, and Drew, he's got a ball hose, too, you know? Yeah. But that's not how it is right now. I don't think anybody cares for his leadership style. Like, that's how it's starting to feel. Like, he hasn't, not that anybody dislikes him, I don't think, yeah. But I don't think that anybody looks at him to, like, run the show. Like, that's kind of the sense that I'm getting.
Well, it's why I think that he kind of fell out of favor in Denver with Teddy being there.
Yeah. It definitely feels a bit that way. But I guess I thought it was more like a 60-40 in terms of Geno being in front in this competition and how things are going to go. But after listening to all these OTA pressers, like, it's probably closer to like 95-5.
Now you're ready to lock it up.
Yeah, he's gone. It put him in the back. And I started a new pound sign the other day with Jared. Pound sign, Geno is for real, though.
You know, there was one moment, though, before OTA started that I was ready for Drew Lock. And that was when I saw Geno's drama tweet that ultimately got deleted. He tweeted out saying, they rather go blind than see me win, which... Yeah, he tweeted out, they rather go blind than see me win.
Was this before he got re-signed?
No, this was May 20th.
Oh, okay.
Tweeted, then deleted. It's the kind of drama-y type.
He does.
Yeah. Emo. I'm not into it.
Yeah, he throws those out every now and then, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
I mean, last season, I guess they didn't watch me play or some crap like that when they...
Just go and play, dude. Why do you even care what?
Just go some ball, dude. Yeah. Just go ball. But yeah, that was my biggest takeaway from the OTA stuff. It's difficult to know anything else other than Pete is not a big fan of the format, I don't think, and doesn't love the fake football that he had to watch over the last week or whatever it's been.
The one for me, the thing that I got out of it was. The first injury that we heard about, at least the first significant injury that we heard about, Rashad Penny has a hamstring injury because of course he does.
Because of course he does. Yes. Yeah. That one surprised me all of 3%. Like, just really?
Oh, it wasn't surprising to me. It was just like, really?
Oh, I know.
This is the first injury news update that we get out of OTAs, and it's Rashad Penny.
Yep. Not right as rain. Not ready to go. Just needs a little more time.
But
he's running around and doing all the things, so he's fine. You know, it's going to be fine. Don't worry about it.
Everybody saying, well, don't worry. If it was a game, he would be fine to play. You know, that's just not what I want to hear. I just want to hear that a dude's running around in practice and is fine. Like 99% of the other dudes who are running around in practice and not reporting injuries.
After a whole offseason to heal, OTAs being, you know, pretty mild in terms of contact and all that stuff. Like, yeah, you should be okay.
You can't make it through two practices without feeling a little twinge in your hammy.
Right. Yeah, unless you're coming off major surgery, you know.
The other big news out of camp, Levi Lewis, a.k.a. Lefty Kyler, a.k.a. the Chosen One, waived by the Seahawks.
Yeah. I really don't have a lot to say about it. I mean, the guy can't see over the line, so.
Too short to play quarterback.
At least for that particular human, it looked as if the height was a difficulty for him.
It was an issue.
Yeah.
The other piece of news that I thought was intriguing is Jordan Brooks calling the plays on defense.
Yeah. I guess, not entirely surprising, but. You'd almost thought that maybe they had gone to Barton if he's taken over the middle.
Yeah, but I would say either Barton or I wouldn't even be that surprised if Quandre were to get the green dot on defense. It doesn't have to be a linebacker.
It doesn't have to be, but I do think that trying to get the information passed from so far behind the line of scrimmage to the line of scrimmage in a timely manner and all of that, I think would be difficult. I think having it be one of the linebackers is fairly important because obviously, they're in the middle between the linemen and the secondary players. just strategically.
I like it from a leadership perspective from Brooks and hearing his press conference. I got more of a sense of not leadership, but just confidence that really I don't know if it's just the longevity with the team now that he's been there. I felt like I heard just a little bit more out of Brooks, like a little more personality coming out. I've never really had a sense that he was a big leader on the defense, but maybe now with Bobby moving on, maybe that opens up the opportunity. Maybe mm-hmm. he sees himself that more. Maybe he's more comfortable with the defense now. It seemed a little bit different to me.
It did seem a little bit different. And you heard Pete talk about the idea that there's a lot of different guys that have the opportunity to step up right now. And with that void in leadership that leaves with two all-timers and Russ and Wags leaving. And the funny thing, this would be my second big takeaway from the OTAs and the press conferences and everything. Listening to all these different dudes talk, it's almost as if they were all just like really ready to just have a fresh start, kind of change course, make this their own. There was a quiet, easy confidence to many of the player interviews in terms of this team going forward that I didn't quite expect. Like, I don't know. It just had a tone to it that I can't quite put a finger on, but it felt a lot like, yeah, okay, Russ is gone. Great. Now we get a chance to put our stamp on this. And they seemed excited for the opportunity.
I think that speaks to the culture that Pete Carroll creates. He's not going to, you know, even if, gosh, I've heard it posed to guys. I think it was Cody Barton who did an interview on Seattle radio, and they asked him about how players on the team think of the idea just that they're only predicted to win such and such amount of games this year, you know, the over-under. And I wouldn't expect a player to pay attention to that, but just his answer, like the way he responded to it was like, why would we care about that? It literally right. matters not at all.
No, it's been interesting to hear the new players as well. And I've enjoyed a lot of the rookie interviews and kind of listening to them and seeing what they might be all about. And it's going to be just a really fascinating preseason for a change. Like, it's going to have a lot of drama to it.
It's so much different than what we've been dealing with. And the thing that got me, and we can get into some more Russ stuff in a bit too, but the fact that he was asked if there was any emotion, if there was going to be any emotion around that week one game in Seattle. Nope, no emotion, just another football game.
Yeah, for me, I just can't have it be an emotional day. I got to make sure that it's not emotional and all that. And you know what I was thinking in my head when I listened to him talk about that and everything? Well, catfish, you don't get a choice. Like, when you show up, we're bringing the emotion. We're going to make this emotional for you.
You are this going to feel now. The emotion.
You're going to feel the catfishing feels, Russ. All right. You don't get to just choose that you're not going to have emotions about it that day. We've decided otherwise. Right. So that was one of the things that I got from that.
It's fine if you want to go into it with that mindset and prepare for it. But I think it's going to be pretty jarring when you prepare yourself for one way and then you ultimately feel emotion, because there's no way you can go into it otherwise. That'd be like asking any of the players on the Seahawks if it's going to be emotional going up against Russ. Like, what, you're just not going to feel emotion? That's not, if you're a human, Russ, I know you're not a robot. If you're a human, you feel emotion.
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe he's such a weird dude that he can, you know, turn off that emotion. Cause man, there's been some more Russell Wilson weirdness here in the last couple weeks here. And it's just been interesting to watch the Broncos. Just, I don't know exactly how to put it. Like, embrace Russ in a way that they're all taking on his weirdo personality in kind of an odd way.
We just ignored that stuff. That's how we dealt with it. They're actually embracing it.
Yeah, they really are kind of going as Russ goes to a degree. I mean, that whole schedule release video that they put out was one of the weirdest catfishing things I have seen in a good while. It was so bizarre, with the cherry on top being unhinged John Elway hopping on a scooter inside for some reason and like almost crashing into a wall, shouting, "Let's ride," like a crazy person.
Let's ride!
There it is. There it is. I mean, that might as well be like a Howard Dean moment right there, right? When he was like, "Wah!
Let's ride!
Let's ride!"
Yeah, that that video was fun. You had "Let's Ride." You had this.
Omaha, Omaha, Omaha.
So weird.
Hello. Yep. Hey, Mr. Manning, Mr. Manning, I've got a Mike Roch on the line for you. He says he knows you.
This next one for me, if I were Russ, I would have veto power over this line in particular.
I think things are going pretty well around here. I mean, I've learned a lot from Mr. Manning.
The only joke in there that I thought that was decent and at least self-aware was when he's like, "And who gets a house with 12 bathrooms, 4 bedrooms?" Like, that doesn't, and then gets interrupted, right? I thought that was the only kind of self-aware
that was
part
good.
Of the whole thing. But
and sorting was, mail with Thunder. Or not Thunder.
Kind
of. Thunder is the actual horse.
Okay.
What's
isn't their mascot called Jackass?
No,
isn't that,
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think it's Jackass.
Okay. I can't disagree with that. That sounds right.
Yeah, it feels right. I can say that. But God, what an awkward, weird video. And that's not the first one. Like, they did the fake draft call, right? Like, the whole idea of him having to be the center of attention and in the middle of the spotlight is really showing up early here in Denver. And John Elway's little cameo there, that was direct evidence that the Let's Ride curse is just sinking into their brains. Like, it is starting to infiltrate that organization. Like, I cannot wait to send Jared that video every time the Broncos lose this year, which I think will be plentiful.
Let's ride!
God, what a weirdo.
The Elway got into that too. That was, man, yeah. How short did Russell look walking next to Peyton Manning?
Pretty short.
That was another takeaway from that video.
But Peyton's a freaking monster too.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like 6'8 or something like that, right? 6'7.
I don't think he's that tall. I think he's 6'5, 6'6, but.
Okay. Well, either way, it's like 3/4 of a tree.
Yeah. The top of Russ's head was like at Peyton's shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. But just bizarre. But I did text that to Jared and just was like, what was this? What the actual bleep is this?
You're going to have so many more opportunities for this.
Oh, and with usually I send stuff like that. He's always got some sort of comeback, you know,
he's got,
but
nothing.
You know, you've got him dead to rights when he says something like in return, like, "I really wish you hadn't seen that." He can't even defend it.
I kind of feel dirty just going and clicking on Russ stuff with the Broncos now. Like, I'm watching the practice videos to see how Russ is throwing the ball. And I don't know. I feel like I shouldn't do that. But I almost feel like because it's our job to report on the team and our former quarterback that I kind of have to. It makes me feel dirty.
Yeah. Now that we're getting to the point here, do we seen a few of these like promo type videos come out that him and the Broncos are collaborating on and having each and every one of them be a bigger dumpster fire than the last? It's making it a lot easier for me to click on those little deals because I know that I'm going to get some enjoyment out of it. That's where we're at now.
Take it all in now, because once he's thrown for 25 touchdowns in the first 8 games of the season and some of those are on our team, then it's not going to be as fun.
Yeah, we'll see. I've been giving that AFC West a lot of thought, man. And I really think I like the Chargers in that division.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Actually, if you listen to Clinton Bonner and Wilson Kahn, they did their PNW prop bets, the show that they're going to be doing come fall.
And yeah, I saved it for my drive tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, him and there's and Bloomy's schedule release Tinfoil Hat podcast.
You got that locked.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got him saved and ready to go for when I start to drive tomorrow.
Well, Wilson likes the Chargers. That's why. When you said that, it reminded me.
Okay. Well, he's kind of a smart dude. I listened to the GM from the Chargers talk a bit this last week or so, and I really like kind of where their head's at, where their franchise is. And
their coach has a really cool name.
Yeah. I mean, Staley's not the best. And yeah, I like where they're at. I think the Raiders are going to be improved. And I think the Chiefs could take a step back this year. It's hard to maintain. I mean, what has it been? 4 straight years they've been to the AFC Championship game now? I don't know that that's doable 5. Like, that seems difficult.
Yeah, and they're already obviously having to get rid of Tyreek. You're seeing the impacts of having to pay your starting quarterback a big-time deal, and it happens to all the best teams, right? You can only hold together so many of your best players for so long.
And Russ is out there spending more time, you know, being a celebrity quarterback than in the playbook. Nathaniel Hackett is just a giant fanboy. Well, we're building this whole offense around Russ. Everything we're just doing Russ. Like, the most annoying part of that schedule release video was when he pops out of the kitchen, and now they give me the freedom to let me do what I do best. Okay, bud. Like, you had that freedom before, too. You just started stinking it up in the second half of every year for the last 3 years.
Back to our team. Back to Clint Hurt, who is on 710 Seattle Sports. And, man, they went into depth into the defense. He talked about his decision to shift more toward a 3-4 defense from the 4-3 or 4-3 with 3-4 principles, as Pete has said in the past. But here's Clint talking about why he is in favor of that move.
You know, you want to have the ability to be balanced, you know, and what happens is formationally, a lot of times offenses can put you in certain formations and sets to make you uncover so you can see coverage. They can see coverage-wise what you're doing. And obviously in today's game, everything is all about how you affect the quarterback, not only by pressuring and hitting and sacking him, but also, you know, screwing with his reads, you know, pre-snap and post-snap, you know, and the things you can do with that. And what 3-4 allows you to do is you can be balanced and be able to play out of a too high shell and be able to cover down with your edge guys and whatnot when necessary. So anything that you can do to make the quarterback have to work, and I believe it's more than half the teams in the NFL right now are playing 3-4 defenses. You know, so that's where the league is trending. And it's not a surprise. You look at all the quarterbacks that's coming in the league right now and all the RPO stuff that's across the league. It's something that you got to have. And here's the thing. It's not that if you go 3-4 that you just don't have any 4-3 elements to your defense. That's not true. A lot of the fronts and things like that, the multiplicity that you can give, you can still play over and under structures that you usually have in 4-3 defenses. But you can also play bounced and play as a 0 and 2-4 techniques and have overhangs and things of that nature. So the multiplicity of 3-4 defense is why I've become a big fan of it, because I can get to whatever I need to with that structure and principle and the principles with it coverage-wise as well.
Right. So these are the takeaways that I have from what Clint said right there. And first off, I'm not a giant X's and O's guy. Like, I know a fair amount. I'm not an idiot, but you know, I'm just a fan like the rest of you guys, too. So it's difficult to, you know, parse through every single thing that he said there without being a total X's and O's nerd. But the two things that I take out of that is, one, in his opinion, the 3-4 allows him to disguise both his pass rush and his coverage better than he can in a 4-3. And I think just right there, that's a great thing, knowing that when the quarterback comes to the line, he doesn't know exactly what he's doing at the snap of the ball, unless you're maybe like Tom Brady and you've seen it all, right? So if you can screw with people, like he said, a little bit, that'd be great. Second thing.
Well, and on that topic, I mean, what you saw last year when, you know, for example, when Carlos Dunlap lines up on one side of the line, as a quarterback, you're not thinking that Dunlap's going to drop into coverage. But ultimately, you have to have that guy drop into coverage sometimes, because otherwise you can ignore that thought that, oh, there's that potential there. Whereas if you're getting these more athletic linebackers that have the ability to rush the quarterback but also drop into coverage, then that's something that you can – it messes with the quarterback even more when they really don't know, other than that, you know, okay, well, if Carlos does drop back, it's not like I have to really worry about him picking off a pass, right, or, you know, being in the right place, because it's just not something that he does routinely. And I think having that flexibility might be something that he's looking for, too.
Oh, for sure. I think that's a great way to put it. And then to kind of piggyback on what you just said there, but the second takeaway I had was playing your edge defenders as linebackers, right? Or looking for that body type and the guy that usually plays the edge in a 3-4 is closer to a traditional linebacker than he is a defensive tackle. Whereas when you're in a 4-3, your DNs are closer to a defensive tackle than they are a linebacker.
Yeah.
So if they're closer to being a linebacker than they are a D tackle, they've got that extra speed and quickness. You can drop them into coverage, but he had mentioned specifically the RPO stuff and all of that and stretching the defense horizontally. Cause that's what you see the vast majority of these offenses, especially the ones in our division doing, is they really attack you sideline to sideline. And so by having a little more speed out on the edge with more linebackery speed kind of guys, you're able to defend that a little bit better as well.
Nope, that makes a ton of sense. And then, yes, then having on the back end the ability to play the two high coverages and really take away some of those deep passes, especially considering the quarterbacks and the wide receivers that are in the division too. I think the structure probably lends itself more toward that going full 3-4 versus having the 4-3, although it may not look a whole lot different.
I need to go back and look at a lot of the Chiefs defense in exactly how they used Honey Badger and how much they played too high with Honey Badger in there as well. Cause I think that's kind of the role that you're going to need Jamal Adams to play. Like the idea of playing a bunch of too high and taking Jamal Adams and putting him deep. I mean, it doesn't play to his strengths. And I think that's kind of an issue.
No, it makes me wonder, you know, how they ultimately structure that, where they see Jamal, if, you know, they play three safeties, but really Jamal's more in that big linebacker type position. And if they're putting a guy like Blair out there as the other safety, or because they have those options based on just their personnel.
Or Ryan Neal.
Ryan Neal, right? He's still on the team. Man.
Yeah.
They have like four guys who could play safety pretty well.
Pretty well. Pretty well. And
two guys who are elite at it.
I was like, well, shoot, if you got that kind of glut of talent at the safety position, then why not throw Diggs and Neal out there and bring Adams down as kind of a rover?
Yeah.
Just a catfish it up, however he's going to catfish it up guy. That's what he does.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see how they do that. And another thing that he talked about was shifting from vision and break on their defensive coverage to pattern match. And maybe we can talk a little bit about what that actually means after he speaks about it.
You have two different principles when you play zone coverage in this league. Some teams are spot drops where you really focus on hitting landmarks. And, you know, and you, once you get to your depth, you get your vision on the quarterback and you're melting and moving off the eyes of the quarterback and reading his shoulders and whatnot, where he's going with the football. And then you got to break and react on the ball. You know, and the other side you can play is more of a zone matchup principle, where you're really playing bodies and pattern matching more so than playing in an area. So are you playing a man or are you playing an area? There's a difference. So you have either zone match or you have spot drop vision and break. We've been a vision and break defense here for a really long time. And we'll have some of those principles in certain calls that'll stay alive. But the big thing right now is obviously the ability to pattern match, and you got to be able to react to the stems of receivers and whatnot and match up with people. So that's where things, it's going to help out. Well, number one, it helps the guys on the back end where you can play stickier and challenge routes more and be in position to get your hands on the football a lot more. Two, it also helps affect the pass rush, you know, because now if we can make that quarterback choke and kind of hold on to the other split second, that's usually what you need for the rush in order to be able to get home. So that's the big part right now that our guys are going through and learning and doing really well with that right now.
So one thing he said there was that they're going to continue to do both. And with the spot drop, I felt like most of my frustration in past seasons come from when guys drop back into their spot and a guy goes out of their zone and into another zone and they're still in that zone, but there's nobody there. And so they're like a wasted defender. And that's the thing that I feel like teams took advantage of the Seahawks defense the most. Now, they're still going to have those plays because, you know, like he said, you're not there's still going to be times where you call those the spot drop type zone defenses. But to be more focused on the pattern match, zone match, that I think they're interchangeable. to be more focused on that, and that being what you end up communicating around, you'll have less of those times where you have a guy out in space covering nothing.
If it eliminates the 12 to 15 yard over the middle completion time and time again over top of the linebackers' heads and underneath the safeties, then yes, please, for the love of God, let's do it. Because, yeah, it did feel like they would just start covering a patch of ground more so than dudes. And it's like, okay, I get it to a degree with the zone coverage part of aspect of it, because somebody might clear back into your zone or whatever it is. But I mean, at some point, you got to actually cover the dudes, right? I mean, isn't that the point, ultimately?
I feel like you could do that anyway, whether you're playing either one of those principles as your, as kind of your overall defensive principle. And yeah, it seems to me, just looking at other defenses, there seems to be philosophies that, okay, we tend to stick to this, but yes, we do the other. I guess I don't understand why you can't just teach your guys, okay, if somebody goes out of your zone, just find work.
Right. Yeah.
But
well, there's that, I suppose.
Maybe that has to do with having that as more of your core philosophy.
There you go. The only thing I didn't enjoy about what he had to say there is he was talking a lot about zone coverage. Can we please stop?
And do more man.
Yes. Yes. Get up on dudes. Jam them at the line of scrimmage. Make it hard for them. Disrupt the timing. Play freaking man.
They're going to do all those things. It's just my sense is that when they're installing the defense, that they're going to prioritize their communication more around one aspect of it. And now it's going to focus more on the zone match versus vision and break, watching the quarterback, that sort of thing.
Cool. That, I mean, it sounds like change, and I'm good with it.
It does. Again, it's probably not going to be a thing that is very noticeable, but yeah, if it can stop some of those things that, that teams have been attacking the Seahawks defense just based on tendency, changing up your tendency is not a bad idea.
Do you think he's going to have a flat defender ever?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
That'd be cool.
I do think that the pattern match, I think it allows you to have a flat defender more often than with the vision and break, the spot drop.
Right. I wonder how it works against screens.
Well, wouldn't it be the same? Screens versus having a guy in the
flat?
You would
think.
Yeah,
you would think. I don't know. But that actually does parlay into a question I wanted to ask you today. And that is, between the offense and the defense, which unit are you most worried about going into this season?
Wow. Most worried about?
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that worries me the most is if the defense can improve, because if it can't, like with all these changes on the defensive side, with Clint Hurt taking over, there's not a ton that's changed on the defensive side. Losing Bobby's obviously significant. But if these moves don't improve the defense and they get out to another slow start like they have the past two seasons, that would concern me more than anything that could happen on the offensive side.
And it feels more likely, right?
Oh, that it could be another slow start?
Yeah, for the defense as per the, I mean, I'm worried about the offense, don't get me wrong, but it does feel like there's a lot more things in moving parts to be concerned about regarding the defense than the offense to me.
Yeah, well, especially with all of the coaching changes, you know, how is that going to change their communication? Is it going to make it so they're that much slower to develop into the regular season? You know, can they get all of these types of communication issues worked out through the offseason and practice and in preseason, and then have things going right to start the season? And you know, we've talked about it before, it's a pretty important game to start off the season.
It is.
You don't want to look dumb on defense after that game. If you get blown out, that would be bad.
I mean, it's probably the most likely outcome, right?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know if I'd be putting money on beating like a 10-point spread.
Yeah. Because I stand behind what I said a couple podcasts ago where I was like, yeah, this stinks that we're seeing Russ right out of the gate, because he generally starts better than he doesn't. And some people are like, well, he's had some slow starts. And it's like, true. But just overall, in the overall body of work, especially in the last few years, he comes out looking hotter in the first half of the season than the second. It's just how it's been.
I'm going to stick with what I said on our schedule reaction, that in terms of the Seahawks' opportunity to beat him, I think it's better to face him early because of the young coaching staff with Denver and the emotion around it being the first game. I think that speaks something to it, too. I think you can probably take more of the emotion out if it is kind of buried in the season a little bit more. But with it that home opener, I think the emotion impacts a little bit more.
I don't think so. And on top of all of that, like, I really would be more inclined to face Russ when he's having his second half of the season collapse.
You're counting on a second half of season collapse, but
It's just once is a coincidence, twice is a trend, three times is you problem. So this year would be four.
Yeah.
So I've just had enough evidence to know that that's what he has been doing the last few years of his career.
Sure.
And then on top of all of that, that division being so hard, and who knows if Hackett's even a good coach. I don't think that skill position group for the Broncos is light years ahead of what Russ was playing with last year.
That's true. That week one, Russ could be still willing to work within the structure of the Broncos offense that they've been practicing through the offseason. And then in the second half, when he's tired of it and he doesn't like how he's, he just wants to chuck it deep through the rest of the season. Yeah, then I guess it could break down in the second half.
Yeah, I'd rather see him in week 10 when they're like 5-4 and have had some really ugly losses within their division. Yeah. I think it's going to take them a minute to put it together. Everybody's penciling them in as a great team. And
well, if it's going to take them a minute to put them together, why not see them week one? Why not be the team to get them started out to their slow start? And then everybody come week three can be like, oh, geez, I thought Russ and the Broncos would be 3-0 by now, but they're 1-2. And man, what's wrong with Russell Wilson?
Yeah, I'll take that too, but I think it's more likely that Russ plays well. Russ plays well. I don't really care if we win or lose. I just don't want Russ to look awesome and us to look stupid, right? Like, if they beat us by Russ handing the ball off all game and everything, okay, fine. Or the defense plays really well and picks off Geno three times and runs them all back and they win 21-10, then fine. I just don't want Russ to light us up.
He won't. He will not light us up. And you want to know why?
Let's ride!
Let's ride, curse, baby. Yeah. But so defense for you, it was defense for me as well that concerned me the most looking at the beginning of this season.
Because that's where I have the higher expectations, I think.
Like, really?
Well, the higher expectations in terms of, okay, Russ is gone. You want to become a more defensive focused team. That's where it has to improve. And if it doesn't, then this team's in trouble. Because the offense isn't saving a bad defense. This offense isn't.
Nope. Definitely not. It can help them as long as they're running the football.
Right.
And moving the chains and changing that time of possession dynamic that was really their Achilles heel last year.
And have healthy running backs.
Yeah. So that kind of leads me to the second question I have for you then today. If you were to pick out a player that on the defense and a player on the offense, that would be basically kind of like the canary in the coal mine of whether or not things are working for the offense or things are working for the defense. Not necessarily the best player, the most important player, the one you're most looking forward to, any of that crap. None of that. Who is that kind of canary in the coal mine for each side of the ball for you?
And we can pick quarterback?
Yeah, absolutely, if you want to pick quarterback. You bet.
Like, if Drew Lock turns out to be awesome, then that would change all of my concerns.
Okay.
I don't know if that's my answer. I'm just asking if that is...
No, that's in range. I'm not taking anybody away from you. Okay. Yeah, whatever you want.
We'll see. Okay, starting out on defense, I will say I'm not going to pick Jordan Brooks because I think that he could be awesome regardless. Right. And, just being in the middle of defense, being another tackle machine the way he has been. I don't know if that would be an indicator to me that the defense would be stellar.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have to go with Jamal Adams because that would be the question of how are they using him? Is he getting, if his numbers for tackles for losses, interceptions, and sacks, like if he's hitting numbers in those, then I would say that the rest of the defense is probably looking pretty good.
Probably playing well. Okay. I think that's a very fair assessment and a fair guy to pick. I thought about Jamal for a minute, but I can also see a world too where he's getting numbers and we're still having some major issues in some certain areas on the team.
Cornerback then about would the be most, an area that I would probably look to past Jamal.
Right. Yeah. So for me, the guy that I thought about was Kobe Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
If he comes in and locks up one side of the defense, and you know, I'm guessing it'd be the right corner position is where they're looking at him first.
Sure.
It was either him or Trey Brown. It was kind of who I was.
It's tough to lean on Trey Brown being that guy, yes, coming off the Achilles injury.
Right, exactly. So that's why I went to Kobe Bryant, because if Kobe Bryant can step in and be an impactful rookie and be a very good, or at least a average to above average starting corner for us going forward here in his first year, that would mean that the secondary is looking a lot better than I think we would all fear. Because I don't worry about them stopping the run so much. I've always been pretty good at figuring out how to get that done, no matter who's been in there. And now, again, I guess that's not a fair statement, whoever's been in there, because Wagner's always been there. So we're doing it without Wags, right? So that could be a big part of it. But I worry about that less. I feel like the pass rush has a real chance to come together with Nwosu and Taylor. So I like the way that looks. The position group that scares me the most is the secondary. And if Kobe Bryant is playing well, then I think that means the entire defense is probably doing okay.
Yeah, counting on a rookie to be that particular
guy.
That's
where we're at this year, man.
And that's probably a fair way to look at it, too, is if they drafted well and they're actually able to get a fourth round pick on the field starting.
Yeah.
And it's not due to injury or and he's actually playing well. I could see that. Then the next place I would go would be the pass rush, though, because, yes, you say they've been able to kind of get there. But I also
should stop the run. I felt good about them stopping the run. I just thought that Nwosu tandem with Taylor has quite a bit of promise. Like, that's what I look at when the team is selling me on, hey, we've got these two guys to rush the passer. Am I looking at it like when they sold Kerry Hyder to me last year? And I was like, really? No, I don't think so, man. I look at this pairing and go, yeah, okay. I can see how that could come about. I genuinely can.
I do wonder where the significant portion of the pressures is going to come from. Will it be Daryl Taylor? Will he be that guy on the defensive line? I don't know if I can say for sure, but
no.
If I had to peg one guy, he would be the one that he would be the next guy on the list for me.
Right. Right. So, okay. I think we were not far off on that. And I thought it was an interesting exercise, especially on the defensive end.
Yeah.
Because of all the moving parts and everything. Like, who do we really need to step up and look good and to kind of put this thing together in?
On offense,
yeah,
I'm going to pick DK because I think as much as I want to go quarterback, I don't even know if I think Geno will be the guy. But even if it's Drew Locke, I don't think that part of it matters, because if DK is the guy who is going off and going into his third year, fourth year now, right?
Yes, it would be the fourth year, right?
Going into his fourth year. And coming off of that foot injury, is he going to be able to? I look for him to be that guy, to be the emotional leader, to be the impact guy. Now, as far as, you know, team captain guy, I feel like Lockett can be that guy. Geno may even end up being that guy if he's the quarterback who gets the C. But I think of Tyler Moore as the leadership part, and I don't see him as the guy who carries the offense necessarily. Whereas I do see DK as having that capability. And so if he is a guy who's getting 8 to 10 touches per game and having that kind of impact to be the guy that defenses have to focus on, and yet he's still getting good production, then he would be the one guy that would be that for me. Whereas if he's not, then I would say, yeah, the offense they could be struggling because the defenses can just load up to try and stop the run. And it, once they do that and nobody, and there isn't somebody to get DK the ball, then this offense could really struggle.
Interesting. I went back and forth between two different things. And one was a receiver, because I understand where your head's at with picking a receiver there, and especially DK. I just think that when it comes to DK, it's inconsequential. What, he's going to get his numbers no matter what.
I don't know if I can say no matter what.
I mean, pretty much. He's going to get his numbers. Like, he's going to make some big catches, and he's going to be an impact player. Like, that's somebody that I'm penciling in and be like, okay, 70 to 100 catches, 5 TDs, good season. Like, if
five? That's what? Not a good season. He's had double digits the last... He's also had Russell Wilson, but I still expect him to get double digits.
I'm managing expectations with the quarterback that we have. I said 5 to 10.
Okay. I only heard 5, and then maybe it's just because I heard 5 and then I flipped out.
Maybe. So I kind of think DK is a given. I kind of feel that way with Tyler too. And like, those two guys are like, I don't worry about them. They're our best players on offense. So they should put up numbers.
Okay. So where are you going?
So it was either receiver, or to me it was running back, because if they're running the hell out of the ball, then we'll probably be all right. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you can overcome Geno or Drew with a great running game. But then I thought, just like you said, well, geez, you know, if everybody just gangs up on the running game and stops that, and then we don't have anything else going on, then we're kind of screwed. So for me, the straw that will stir the drink for the Seahawks this season, or the guy that I think is the canary in the coal mine, is D. Eskridge. I think it's D. Eskridge. And I think that for a couple reasons. One, Geno is going to be the week one starter, mm-hmm. and his strength is the quick game. And D is the jitterbug slot, you know, quick game receiver. And he's got that big time speed and all of that. If Eskridge is having himself a year, imagine how much more difficult it is for teams then to double up on either DK or Tyler, or to really concentrate on the run game, or to do all any of that stuff. If D Eskridge is having a big year, I really think that unlocks everything within the offense. But no, I'm not all that optimistic about it, because they brought in Goodwin the other day, who's what, competing for those same sort of minutes and catches?
Yeah, you got Marquise Goodwin. You also have Bo Melton, who's the 7th round draft pick, who you would...
is a special teamer, and that's great.
Well, I think you also got him to be that guy to challenge D. Eskridge. I feel like he's that same type of guy, but Marquise Goodwin is probably the more veteran guy that you would expect to be the one to push him. Sure, yeah.
So that makes me wonder, well, are they having a hard time believing in Eskridge right now?
I think that they just don't want to get in that position to where if he gets hurt like he did right out of the gates last season, that they aren't stuck with that idea of, okay, well, what do we do now? You know, Freddie Swain wasn't that guy, I guess. They didn't seem to use him. Penny Hart wasn't the guy. They didn't seem to use him in that Eskridge role. So it seemed like a lot of their plan went out the window once Eskridge went out.
Yeah, it did seem to make a big dent in their offense. I mean, I feel like the position Eskridge would play in this offense is closer to being the Cooper Kupp guy than, say, DK being more like the Robert Woods kind of guy.
They need that guy. Well, it seems as though Shane Waldron needs that guy in his offense. And D could make sense for that, too. I thought about going tight end, too, because I do think that tight end could be, like, actually getting tight end play.
Right.
Could be important for this offense.
No, it's going to be super interesting that way, and just to see what happens. But that's the one that made the most sense to me. Maybe I'd like to hear what you guys think, you know, all the different, all you little flockers out there, what different takes you have.
Email in gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com, or hit us up on Twitter and the Discord. And yeah, we can talk about some of the other guys in upcoming shows, how they might impact the offense or defense. What do you say we get to the second half of the show?
Deal. That works. Let's do it.
as we get into the second half of the show, are you ready for my Baker Mayfield watch?
No. Because you might as well shift it to Drew Brees watch.
I laughed at the idea that Drew Brees, after 1 year at being at CBS,
NBC.
NBC. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was NBC.
Yeah.
And he suggests the potential. Now, I think the likelihood of him going and playing on the senior golf tour is probably about as likely as him returning to the NFL, especially considering that he's not even old enough to play on the senior tour yet. But maybe he meant practicing for the senior golf tour.
Maybe.
Pickleball was also one of the other athletic endeavors that he suggested that I also think is probably about as likely as him playing quarterback. But I got an email from one of the sports betting sites, and the odds for Drew Brees to the Seahawks were at the top of the odds chart to get Drew Brees. And it was like -150 or whatever. So it was what you had to bet 100 just to win 50. Is that what the minus is?
I still don't know. And I'm kind of going to keep my useful idiot status about betting until I can start doing some of the betting show stuff with Clinton and Wilson.
So. Right. Okay. Well, that I'm probably going to maintain mine too, but I know that it was the best odds to come to the Seahawks, and they are looking to take Seahawks fans' money because there is zero chance that Drew Brees is coming to Seattle. One, just the fact that, I mean, Pete Carroll and Drew Brees, I don't see that working, especially since Brees doesn't have an arm to throw deep anymore. Pete's not going to want that.
No.
The other thing, Drew's not going to want to come to Seattle with two rookie tackles. That wouldn't work out for him.
No.
I don't see any chance of that happening at all. So the idea that there was any kind of Drew Brees watch, not happening.
And then you have to pay him.
Right.
Like, what is he going to want?
He's not going to take a veteran minimum to come out of retirement.
No. So I don't see that as a viable option either. And does that really move you any further forward? And you don't learn anything, right? We all know Drew Brees is done. Like, he's at the end.
It would teach me whether or not the Seahawks could manage to incorporate screen passes into the offense.
We can learn that with Geno and Drew. Because either way, with Geno or Drew, like, we get to learn, okay, can they actually be a guy or not?
Immediately, Drew would be the best quarterback on the team. It's just, for 1 year, you're not getting any more than 1 year. I don't even think you're getting 2 years out of Drew. So why are you bringing him in 1 year just to go 7-10, 6-11?
With no real mobility?
Yeah.
Yeah, not right now.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense. It makes about as much sense as Baker.
Jeff Howe of The Athletic. The Panthers and Seahawks still haven't ruled out acquiring Mayfield, but they'll need the Browns to take on a much greater portion of his contract than they've offered so far. It's unclear how far apart the sides have been, but the Browns want their contractual intake to be commensurate with the assets they receive in return.
What are they getting in return? This is so dumb. I'm so tired of this conversation. I'm so tired of it because the Browns want something for an asset that's not worth
catfish.
They don't want to pay the contract that they signed up to pay. And then they expect somebody to just take that off their hands. And what, we're dumb enough to do that?
It says to me that the Browns want to pay for a draft pick, but they're not going to eat $17 million of Baker's contract for a sixth round pick.
Yes, they are. That's what they're doing. That is what they are going to do.
They haven't come to terms with the fact that that's what they're going to do.
The only thing that I can figure is the only hope that they have to not have to pay that the majority of that contract is for it to be a Sam Bradford to Minnesota kind of situation where starter gets hurt. They go out and they pick Bradford off another roster. What was it? The Eagles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ended up paying a bunch of money. Like, he got paid again and they traded significant draft capital to get him as well. The Vikings did.
Yeah. The Commanders already got Carson Wentz for a similar type deal. And paying the kind of draft capital that they did to take on Wentz's contract, they're probably going to end up looking bad too.
Yeah, I would have never done that deal. And I think Wentz has a lot more upside than Baker at this point.
No.
I'm not saying I like Wentz's upside. I'm saying in comparison to Baker,
all right.
I think it's a fair amount more.
Okay. I get hung up on this, the idea of guys having high levels of talent that just they haven't been able to realize. Mm-hmm. And yes, that ability, it could be there, but yeah. I guess I don't see if Frank Reich couldn't unlock it in his second time with Wentz that somebody else is going to be able to. I don't see that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. I feel exactly the same way about Baker, only he never had the high end talent to try to unlock in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So what? We get to unlock a mediocre quarterback? Great.
Speaking of mediocre quarterbacks, would you mm-hmm. rather have Baker or Jimmy G?
That's an interesting question.
Because they're they both have the ability to kind of be mediocre. One has shown that he's...
Baker. I'd rather have Baker. Just because he can stay healthier.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good litmus test for me to see where you're at. Because I was hoping that's what you'd say.
I mean, look. It feels right. We were a team that was absolutely loaded this year and we were just a quarterback away and you just needed a guy to come in and just be competent.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I'd bring in Baker and let him compete and see what's happening, but we're not that team. So why bring in Baker at that point?
Okay.
And the drama and everything and have to pay him the money.
Look, Baker's going to find a home somewhere. And I think a big part of why it hasn't happened yet is that he still can't practice anyway. So there's not any teams that are in a big rush to try and make some kind of deal. They want to make the Browns stew in this a little bit. And because the longer this goes on, the more the price comes down, the more they start to think, well, maybe we do have to take whatever deal's out there just so we don't have to. Well, they know they're going to end up having to pay him. They just need a plan for that.
I wonder what the average home value in Saskatchewan is compared to, say, Cleveland. Like, when Baker sells his place in Cleveland to go play for the Rough Riders, like, is he going to take a loss on that? Or is it going to be a little cheaper for him to move up to the Great Providence of Saskatchewan? Or, you know, I mean, he will find a home. I mean, it's just, you know, he might be drinking a little more Molson than he did before.
He's not playing in the CFL.
He just sit out the year instead, you think?
I think so. You wait until somebody is going to have a job opening. There's going to be a job open for him somewhere.
This season?
Yeah. Somebody's going to get hurt. The Seahawks are going to realize come week four that neither Geno nor Drew are going to be the guy. And they just, they want to take a chance
on Baker.
Just
continue to lose and get that high draft pick and don't bring in a malcontent. Yeah.
It's malcontent with Cleveland.
And he was a knucklehead at Oklahoma.
You and a lot of people are down on Baker. And
I'm tired of talking about him. He's not on our team. He's not going to be on our team. I'm done. I'm done with your OU crush on freaking Baker. I mean, if you want to talk Oklahoma quarterbacks, then, you can sit and talk about Kyler or freaking Hurts, guys that are in the league.
Can we talk Marshawn Lynch? I know he's not on our team now. He wasn't on our team last year. But can we talk Marshawn Lynch?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Beast mode all day.
Have you ever watched the Cold as Balls show with Kevin Hart?
No, but I love the title of it. Yeah. I say the phrase Cold as Balls all the time.
So what they do, he brings in somebody to interview and he interviews them in cold tubs. So they start out with just their feet in the cold tub and they got to go all the way in. Hence Cold as Balls.
Cold as balls. Yeah, absolutely.
Marshawn was on the podcast.
I don't think he was a... I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that he was not a fan of the cold tub.
He had strategies for the cold tub. Mm. He took a big towel, a wad of towels, and stuffed them down the front of his shorts, which, I don't know, maybe it heats it up before you have to get cold down there. Maybe there's some kind of insulation that, that helps deal with that. But so as soon as he did that, Kevin Hart immediately followed. And then once they got in the tub, too, he did the towel wrap on his head. And to try and contain some of the heat that way. So I thought it was he showed Kevin some helpful strategies that way. So he helped out Kevin, and Kevin got to help out the listening audience by doing some Marshawn Lynch translation. And so inevitably the question came up of the Super Bowl, you know, him not getting the ball on the 1 yard line, the loss. And so, and Marshawn goes into after the game, how he was feeling and what they were doing. And and so ultimately Hart has to translate.
So my family already know what type of time I'm on. So we bip in the whip, crack my hem open, sliding.
Okay, just stop for a second. So they were sliding, and when they
See,
bro, I got you.
I forgot you got this going on over here, right?
So they were sliding, right? That means they leaving. Crack this bit in the whip means he opened up the henny, right? He opened up the henny. Because he wanted to drink it. Family knew what type of time he was on. That means his family knew he was upset about what happened at the game, so they're not going to question it, which is why he had to crack his bip in the whip to take a sip. So at that point, that just to catch you guys up. Okay, go ahead.
All right, so you feel me? So
I thought that was fun. That was one of the... Because I knew the question was coming, and obviously it has to.
Yeah,
but then to have that that little comedy relief moment in there, that made me feel a little bit better about putting myself through the pain of having to hear Marshawn dealing with that moment.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that Marshawn is answering that question these days, because I remember when you talked to him, that was an off-limits
question.
There
was no questions about the Super Bowl.
Right.
I forgot about
that. I guess you're not Kevin Hart.
So. Yeah, it's true.
But hey, they should have talked to me. I could have given some tips on the cold pool, because at Quinn's Hot Springs here in Montana, they've got one pool that is the temperature of the river that's right there. And it's just like river water cold.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get out of the hot spring into the river water, which is pretty freaking cold, you know,
because it's glacier melt.
It's glacial melt in the winter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what you do, the key is to hold as still as humanly possible. Because you actually heat up the water molecules around your body. And so it doesn't feel as cold. But the second you start to move, then you're back into the colder water again.
Oh.
Yeah. So you got to just be real still.
Good
tip. That's the key.
Well, the other thing that I thought was interesting from the interview with, and it was maybe 15, 20 minutes. So you can get through the whole thing. But Marshawn and his family and friends after the game went through 15 cases of Hennessy.
So they had this little resort for us. I'm talking about we blew that motherfucker down.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm talking about the whole resort, bro.
Yeah, you said
Hennessy did some for me, bro. They probably gave me, I think it was 76 cases of Hennessy, and it was, I think it was like 12 bottles in each case.
God! How many think you went through?
How many cases?
Yeah, how many cases you think you went through?
Realistically, probably like 15.
Oh, that's not a lot at all. 15.
That's not a lot.
15 times 12. Shooting your family. No, that's easy work.
Sarcasm heavy in the, the response from Kevin.
Yeah, absolutely. So what? That would be 174 bottles of Hennessy. Okay. Yeah. So that would be what, like, how many days were they there at this resort?
I don't know.
So, how many family? Let's say at best 50 family members.
Uh-huh.
Like that would be a lot. So 2.5 bottles, like per family member. That's probably even counting the children.
Yeah, it's a pretty good party.
I guess if you like hurling your guts out every 5 seconds, that'd be a lot of Hennessy. I don't know, man.
So you're not, what you're saying is you're not buying that they went through, well, we don't know the number of people, but
you don't know the number of
50
people.
Is a pretty, I mean, if it is 52.5, yeah, it would have to be about 100. And even still, you're talking a bottle a person over 2 days.
That's doable. I could see that, especially after a bad beat.
But that would have to be 170 people.
Which again, isn't out of the realm of possibility.
Why did Hennessy think that he needed 70?
You didn't want him running out, you know?
No, I suppose.
Yeah, I respect it, but I couldn't.
Although they're getting their advertising money's worth, if you know how many years later, and he's still telling the stories about how much Hennessy he went through.
Absolutely.
So, smart. That's smart on them. Good marketing.
I guess I need to start going through two bottles of Hennessy a day now to just be on Marshawn's level.
Well, I mean, every once in a while, not a day.
Well, I mean, they did it a day, right? Day or two?
Yeah, but that was like a one-off after a bad Super Bowl loss.
I hope so, man. Woo-wee. A lot of Hennessy.
I don't know if I have a good transition from Hennessy to our members of the flock, but
no,
here we are.
You don't have one? Yeah. I mean, I know some people who could pound probably more than 70 cases of Hennessy, and that's most of the members of the flock. They're a bunch of alkies. That's the only reason like they would donate to our show, is they're too blitz to realize that they shouldn't.
Nailed it.
You're welcome.
And so we welcome our newest members of the flock after we thank our executive producers, DCH, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, and Rebecca Christensen.
All of the finest flockers you will ever meet in your life. I can guarantee you that.
None of them have sent us Hennessy yet, although Brian has sent us some super fancy... I'm looking at the bottle. I still need to crack my bottle.
That happened a long time ago for me.
We're supposed to do this together, man.
Yeah, I know, but we didn't.
You didn't.
I will say, just a heads up, no hard alcohol for me. I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
Good enough.
Yeah.
The beer is probably the better way to go for me. I know I'll get there.
Yeah.
We also want to thank newest member of the flock, Daniel Corcoran, who came in at $20 a month via PayPal. If you go to seahawkerspodcast.com/support, you can click the PayPal button. That's what Daniel did. So welcome to the flock to Daniel.
Yeah, definitely welcome the flock to Daniel. I don't know why, but we seem to do well in the Daniel community.
Yeah.
We have a fair amount of Daniel little flockers.
We are strong with the Daniels.
Yeah.
If you're a Daniel and have not gotten in the flock, you can go to getintheflock.com or through PayPal. Yeah. I need to get Daniel the Discord. I don't know if I did that yet. So
okay.
Maybe he can email me to remind me, and that way I can get that out.
Very good.
All right.
Yeah.
It's all automatic when it goes through getintheflock.com. And if I need the reminders otherwise, is what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're only producing like 17 podcasts these days.
Yeah, I know. But I will respond to email. So that's where I'm at. A welcome to the flock to Stephen Owen, who came in via getintheflock.com at $12.12 a month.
Heck yeah, man. Another Ring of Honor member then?
Yeah.
That's great, dude.
Because I know Stephen got in the Discord. I saw where he came in.
Because I've thought the off-season Discord so far, not in the Discord, but in the Ring of Honor on Facebook, has been kind of fun.
It has been.
A lot of fun takes, a lot of people with different viewpoints, and I've enjoyed it very much.
It's been fun in the Discord channel, too. So if you want to get in with the conversation in the Discord group, only the $3 a month that gets you right in there. If you want to be part of the Facebook group, that's the 12-12 level. And that's just the way we've been doing it.
I like it. They should like it. I think everybody likes it.
I think it's all good. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything's good in the flock.
People are liking the show. We've gotten 5-star reviews here recently. We've got Monk127 came in with a review via Apple Podcasts saying,
nice.
Chemistry, 5 stars. Love the chemistry between these two guys.
Dude, you should see us in person. The chemistry's off the hook.
We've been
soulmates since kindergarten, babe.
I know.
Yeah.
When we've spent, you know, the last 37 years knowing each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bound to build some
chemistry.
It
could be a lot worse. I think I did a lot better in this deal than you did.
Lucky Shots 369 says, perfect mix of new laughs and details. These guys actually rock. And I'm not even a Seahawks fan. Super useful for insight into all things Seahawks and even good for fantasy football. Helped make some vital week winning decisions worth listening to, whether you're a Seahawks fan or not. Well, thanks, Lucky Shots.
Yeah, yeah. I know who Lucky Shots is.
Oh, all right. Oh, is it Brandon? No.
No.
Your other fantasy football guy.
Yeah.
The one who never listened to you, even though you gave him advice.
Right, but then he did, and
okay,
he
good.
Won some stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he told me the other day, he's like, I'm going to write your review because I listen to your show a lot, man. I like it.
Okay.
You know? And he is a fantasy guy through and through. Like, he's really not a football guy.
Very cool.
So,
Big Mikey Japan, also given a 5-star review, says, great show. Thank you. Appreciate the show a lot. I wish I found it sooner. Oh, and Big Mikey coming in from Japan. This was a review in the Japan Apple Podcast.
Sweet. Store. Yeah, I wish Big Mikey would have found it sooner, too. We needed him.
We did.
Yeah.
Well, I know one guy who found the show very soon because John Davison been with us since the beginning.
Heck yeah, man.
He sent me a Facebook message this week, and he was pointing out he wanted to check in on his homerism because the Washington Commanders, who, you know, he's in with Barry the Commander, Commanders to win the Super Bowl, these are UK odds, which might be different from the US, but Commanders 66-1 to win the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Where would you put the Seahawks in comparison to the Commanders?
Again, I'm not great with the odds things, but the larger number, the worse your chance. Yeah.
Right.
I would say probably 70-1.
70-1. So,
or 100-1, somewhere in there.
It's actually, it's on the high end, 100-1 to win the Super Bowl for the Seahawks.
Okay.
Would you say that that the Commanders would be than the Seahawks? 1/3 more likely?
Sure. If that's how the math works with that, you
I think so. 66 is 1/3 less than 100.
Right.
So 1/3 more likely.
Look, I would put it like this. That doesn't surprise me because I think their defense is a little more sorted than ours. I think that they obviously play in a much easier division.
Right. And that was the thing that triggered me to maybe pick them over. Because looking at their team, I would say they are more likely just to make the playoffs based on their division. Yes. Whereas the Seahawks are going to have, it's going to be a bit of a struggle with the gauntlet that they have to face. So what, and once you're in the playoffs, could things happen? Could wacky things to where they end up making the Super Bowl? Sure, it could end up fluking their way there.
Yeah.
Once you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably where the 34 or more points in odds.
Well, what did John think about this? Did he think that was ludicrous?
Yes.
Okay. I can understand. I honestly do think that head-to-head, if the Commanders and the Seahawks played 100 games, I think we'd probably win like 55 of them, 60 of them.
Yeah.
I think we're the better team. Not by a lot, but I think they're the better team. But they do play in a much more difficult division. And I do think that... you know, this getting over Russ stuff is going to take a minute. It's not just going to be we roll out there week one, smoke him, and just start, you know, kicking ass and taking names for the 22 season. I don't think that's likely.
I'm not finding the rest of my chat history with John because I thought he had more reaction to this. But now the only message I'm seeing is where he says he's chatting with Barry and they have decided to try and get to Munich. I think, though, Brady likely playing, demand will be overwhelming. They may limit tickets to German fans only. I don't know. Do you know if they will be selling them in Seattle? And I think the only thing that I know for sure right now with regard to the Germany game is that the Seahawkers group members have a link that was put out to where you could get on a list for a travel agency that was trying to get tickets and accommodations and all that squared away. And they're asking quite a bit for tickets, which I suppose, even not knowing what they're going to be, it made me think that the ticket agency might be getting tickets on the secondary market. I don't know. But it was a pretty good chunk.
I was going to say, I mean, odds are you could find a ticket outside the stadium day of. Yeah.
But you can always find tickets to games once it's going on. It just depends on how much you're going to pay for it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I just don't know what were they asking right now?
Well, for the travel agency, they said if you're going to get your own tickets, you could deduct $300 from the ticket package. And they were only guaranteeing an upper level ticket for that $300 amount. So $300 for an upper level seat.
Oh, when they say upper level, they mean like upper deck, not like a suite or, you know, an upper level kind of thing.
Correct. Yeah, like the top most section of the stadium. Yeah, top bowl. Whereas you could upgrade to lower bowl for another 300.
Do they think this is the Super Bowl?
That's what makes me think that they don't really know what tickets are going to cost. So they're trying to get an idea of what the demand is. And
yeah,
travel agencies have to make money somehow to plan all this. They're planning a tailgate party. They're planning tours. And so there's a lot that goes into the package.
Yeah, it sounds like you get planned out if you go with them.
Planned out? Oh.
Yeah. Like, they plan out your ass your entire time that you're there. Like,
you don't have to do everything
planned to death
that is on the itinerary, but
yeah,
I think for the shortened, I think there was a 4-day package, and so there wasn't any kind of tours. It was just you get travel from the airport to the hotel, you get the hotel accommodations, you get the travel to the stadium on game day, you get the tailgate on game day, and so I think that was the.
I feel like I can do that cheaper on my own, better.
Okay.
And still have the freedom to do what I want while I'm there.
It's possible.
I don't like getting planned out, dude.
Yeah.
But that, yeah.
I do kind of like the idea of having all the party stuff like set up for you. But I think they also offered options to where, like, if you're local, you can just pay the amount to join their tailgate party too.
Okay.
Lots of options.
All right. I can fake a German accent to, you know, be a local and just buy a ticket to the tailgate.
I mean, you can, but it's not going to go well for you.
Are we sure?
I guess we'll find out.
Practice. I mean, I got months, baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Emmert's a major German last name, so.
Huh.
It's in me somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, sounds like John and Barry may be joining us there.
That'd be great. That'd be really cool. You know what I should do is the kids over there right now. She's in Germany as we speak.
Tell her to line up for tickets.
Yeah, start scouting this
catfish.
No, she's there for 5 weeks. She's got time.
She's got time. Put your kid to work.
Exactly, spoiled little brat.
What do you say we get on to some do better and better at life?
Oh, right. Okay.
My do better this week. I'll kick things off. I was a little bit disappointed by this. The news of the day this week. Let's see. The news came out on Wednesday. Colin Kaepernick getting a tryout with the Las Vegas Raiders. And I saw that they posted the article on a Seattle Seahawks fan page. Now, maybe the anger emojis that I saw underneath the article were because that it's not Seahawks-related content. But it was, I have to say that it was enough people angry over this that it, I guess it bothered me a little bit because if you haven't noticed, Adam, there's been some other significant events that have happened here recently in our country just over the past few weeks.
Huh?
Yeah. I guess with all of these other external events, Kaepernick getting a tryout with the Raiders doesn't top my list of things that might get me upset at all. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking that if this is on the level of you even getting angry enough to move your finger toward the angry, it takes some work to not just click the like button and to hunt for the angry emoji on Facebook. And so if this is where you're spending your time directing even that amount of anger, I feel like maybe you should rethink your priorities.
Oh, absolutely. If this is where the outrage machine kicks in for you is over this, you may need to reevaluate how you express outrage.
Yeah. Not school shootings that have happened, not shootings at grocery stores. No, it's Colin Kaepernick getting a tryout for a team in the NFL. And so, yes, if you found yourself in a week where so much has happened, finding anger to direct in that direction, you need to do better.
Absolutely, man. Definitely do better. Yeah, for people to look, he's not coming back. He's not going to be in the league anymore. Like, he's just not. So you chill out. Like, who cares if he goes and has a tryout?
Right.
What's it to you?
That's why I find having any trouble caring.
Exactly. I guess here's the other part of this, of your do better that I really like here is like, why would you care at all about this? Why would you have like unbelievable excitement or unbelievable anger regarding this, one way or the other? This should fall directly under the category of meh.
I could see giving it a like because, hey, there's a team giving him a chance.
Again, that's being like, all right, well, good for him, and just giving it a like is one thing. Like, I'm talking about.
And if you don't, if you don't feel the need to like it, just keep scrolling.
Yeah. Be Thumper from frickin' Bambi. If you don't got anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
And if you feel anger, like, find other things that, you know, are worth getting angry about.
Exactly. Exactly. Because there's a plethora of things that you could get angry about on any given day. I can guarantee you that.
Oh, there's always stuff to get angry about. And I'm just saying, in particular, like this past week, there's been especially some things that are worth being angry about.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Although it's also by this past week, I would say maybe anger isn't the way we want to trend either. Why don't we start picking each other up?
Yeah, maybe, you know, not be such a dick all the time, which is something that I'm trying actively to do, is be less of a dick all the time. And it's
good philosophy.
It's almost working. Like, you know, just trying to at the end of the day be like, well, okay, I can see how. You know, like, for example, I got really mad at you about...
Yeah, do I need to be a dick right now? Yes or no?
Right. Yeah. Like, basically, I wanted to make a flow chart for everybody in this country about every issue that has to do with somebody else's body. And it's like, does this topic have something to do with somebody else's body? If the answer is yes, then shut the catfish up. Like, it's none of your business. Then just shut the catfish up. If the answer is no, then okay, I'm ready to hear your opinion. But it's real simple. If it has to do with somebody else's body, just shut the catfish up.
Yeah.
That almost was my do better.
You got it in the do better segment anyway.
Yeah. Let's see here. What is my do better for this week? I actually have a couple better. It's not often that I have multiple better at lives, but no do betters. This is kind of a struggle for me.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I even saw you struggling and took the first go at the do better. And even with that, here you are.
I swear to God, I had even saved things, you know, to go into. But I think probably the closest thing that I could find, just because it does tie into everything that we had been talking about regarding Russ and things like that here. And again, he's not our quarterback anymore. And so at some point I'm going to have to let it go. And I need to be a better person and all that. But not today. Not today. I did see an article that was written. Let's see here. Let me see if I can pull it up. Here we go. By The Ringer. That was really well done. And it just, you know, what does the title of it? What does the Seahawks QB situation signal about their short and long term plans? And they go through a lot of different things. And it just kind of breaks down, like, we're going to find out a lot about whether Russ is who we've always thought he was, or what the national media thinks he was, or, you know, if Gino and Drew are the guys that we think they are or not who they are and all that. But one of the more interesting things that popped up within this was he had some heat map comparisons of Russell Wilson's passing charts compared to Matt Stafford. And for as much catfishing as Russ did about how we didn't just let him cook and do all this stuff and blah, 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 you start to look at the heat maps and you realize he turned down a third of the field as more often than somebody like Matt Stafford running the same exact offense. He absolutely did not throw to the field to our detriment, maybe because he couldn't see, maybe because it just wasn't his thing. I don't know. Or maybe he was just stubborn. But whatever it was, I came away from this article being like, you know, for as much as Russ catfished about what we didn't do for him and what opportunities weren't there for him, he sure didn't take advantage of everything that was available to him. And for that, a little bit do better. And then on top of that, a little bit of better at life for this Ringer article, because I've always wanted to see those heat maps, right?
Yeah.
Of where Russell threw, because we had our gut feeling of whether or not, like, we always felt like, hey, he just doesn't throw it. Those 15-yard middle of the field plays, like, those just aren't there for him on crossers and things like that. And that's what your gut said. But to see it in graph form, it's very validating.
Yeah, those heat maps, you can pull them up, the comparisons at rbsdm.com. Ben Baldwin doing the website there. I'm sure folks follow him out on Twitter. And I know he does some stuff for The Athletic, too. But yeah, it's interesting to look at those heat maps and just see where the cold parts are for Russ in comparison to where the heat is more for Stafford.
They're almost like mirror opposites.
Well, Russ definitely on the sidelines and deep outperformed Stafford.
Yeah.
But those over
check downs and middle stuff, no. I mean, like, where Russ outperformed Stafford, like, the heat spots were a little smaller, you know, in this offense compared to when it was vice versa.
Okay. Well, we're going to see. That is something that we get to see coming up this season. Another thing we get to see coming up this season, and my better at life this week, is for KJ Wright.
Oh, catfish! All right, fine.
Do we have co-better at life this week?
I've got a backup. I actually have a backup. But I'm glad you're picking this up because, yes, 100%.
KJ Wright is better at life than Skip Bayless because he made his predictions for the AFC West. And here's what KJ Wright has. He says, I've got the Raiders at number one, the Chargers at number two, the Chiefs finishing third, which means, yes, he has the Denver freaking Broncos with Russell Wilson, the Let's Ride curse in effect with the Broncos heading up the rear in the AFC West. And so for KJ Wright, he's on Team Seahawks. He's also on Team Raiders, his two teams in the NFL. But for riding with the Let's Ride curse, KJ Wright, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, I love that when I saw that article come out in. Because I think he did touch on a couple of like actual things. He was like, I don't see their defense as being all that great.
Yeah. He said, you've got to look at it from a holistic standpoint. You got to look outside of the quarterbacks. What's on the other side of the ball? What's on defense? I believe the Broncos have some pieces, but I don't know if it's going to be enough to slow down these weapons in the division. It's going to be tight, but only three are going to make it.
I don't think three are going
to
make it
to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's going to be two.
Really?
I think it'll be probably Chargers Chiefs.
Okay. Oh, so you think KJ's homering for the Raiders a little bit, putting them number one?
Yes, big time.
I could see the Raiders being competitive.
I could see a world where the Chiefs are the last team in this division.
I could also see a world where the Chargers are last in the division, too.
I don't. I think they easily have the best defense. And if they can just fix that institutional problem with winning close games that they have had despite coach or quarterback for the past 15 years.
That's what has me worried, too. Like, how is that? How do they not fix that? How do they not luck their way into some close wins in one season?
Yeah, I think this is the year.
Okay.
All right, man. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week. It's for basketball legend Bob Cousy, old school NBA player for the Celtics, won a bunch of titles with Russell and that whole era of Celtics basketball. He was recently criticized on First Take when JJ Redick was talking to one of the New York radio personalities, and they're talking about all time great point guards and things like that. And they bring up Cousy is being like, hey, this is a guy you need to talk about. He's one of the all-time greats. And JJ Redick shoots back, who I like, actually, but he shoots back, well, he was being guarded by plumbers and firemen. So, Bob Cousy, at the ripe age of 93, decided he wasn't going to take that lion down. So he fires back. This is what he had to say. I'll read it. It's about three paragraphs here. People with less talent will always try to make a name for themselves by criticizing other people and hopefully getting some attention and perhaps increase their credibility. So when you respond to something like this, you play into their hands. I won't do that, but I will defend the firemen and the plumbers that he referenced. And I'll just give you a few of their names of these firemen that I played with and against during those years. How about Bill Russell, the aforementioned? Not too bad a player. Will Chamberlain? Remember that guy? He wasn't bad. I guess he must have fought fires as well. But in any event, Will Chamberlain, still the best in my judgment, small forward that ever played the game. A guy named Elgin Baylor, a couple of point guards that weren't too shabby. My colleague who also had an award created, guy named Oscar Robertson, who was pound for pound the best player perhaps in the game. Oh, Jerry West, wasn't too shabby. Yeah. The guys on our team, Sam and Casey Jones, a guy named Hondo, he wasn't too bad. Tom Heinisohn, Frank Ramsey, Georgia, Mike and Bob Pettit, I could go on and on. And we must have had the best firemen and plumbers on the planet at the time. And I was very proud to play with all of them. 93-year-old Bob Cousy with the fire. It's hitting back to J.J. Redick. I thought it was awesome. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
I love it. Yeah, there were a few names there that I think even casual basketball fans will recognize as all-timers.
All-timers, for sure. I loved it. I thought that was such a great chirp back. And, I hope I can still talk trash at least a quarter that good when I'm 93. That'd be amazing.
And see, what some casual basketball fans won't know is that J.J. Redick played basketball.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. A really good college player.
Oh, that's fun. I enjoy trash talking 93-year-olds. Like, classy trash talk, too.
Exactly. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, Wilt Chamberlain, he wasn't too bad. Great fireman, too.
Great fireman. Great plumber.
Yeah, great plumber. Good stuff.
Well, we will go enjoy. Well, hopefully you'll get to enjoy the rest of the basketball playoffs here. It's been interesting for your Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I got to bandwagon jump on my Celtics fandom here in the playoffs. Didn't pay much attention during the regular season like usual, and looking forward to it.
Well, here we go. Go whatever a catchphrase is that Boston Celtics fans use. What?
Go C's.
Okay.
This isn't hard.
I don't know what it is. It's like, let's ride. I didn't know that was a thing. Celtics have a thing that I don't know about.
See, the funny part is most of Bronco Nation didn't know Let's Ride was a thing either. So,
but now we all know.
Let's ride!
Oh my God.
And with that,
it'll never get old, and there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.